pointing out the imperfections in the roadbed. Once Laurent had agreed to my terms, I managed to persuade him to detour to the place where the wreckage of the other cable car had come down. By the time we got there, a large crowd had assembled, and I then had to persuade Laurent to wait while I pushed through to the middle. There, in what remained of the front of the cable car, I found Waverley, dead, his chest impaled on a piece of mulch bamboo, just like one of the deadfalls I had rigged for Ryvich. His face was a mass of blood, and might have been unrecognizable except for the blood-filled crater where his monocle had been. It must have been surgically attached. "Who did this?"
"Harvested," said a stooped woman next to me, spitting the words through the gaps in her tooth. "That's good optics, that is. Get a good price for that, they will."
I resisted any burning curiosity to find out who they were. I walked back to Laurent's tricycle, feeling that in some way part of my own conscience had been ripped out, no less brutally than Waverley's eyepiece. "Well," Laurent said, while I climbed back into the tricycle, "what is it you took from him? You think I went back for a trophy?" He shrugged, as if the matter were of no importance, but as we moved off, I had to ask myself just why I had gone back, if it was not for the reason he had thought. The journey to Grand Central Station took an hour, though it seemed to me that much of this time was spent doubling back on our route to avoid areas of the mulch which were either feared or impassable. It was possible that we only travelled 3 or 4 kilometres from the place where I had been attacked by Waverley's people. Nonetheless, none of the landmarks I had made out from Zebra's apartment were visible here, or if they were, I was seeing them from unrecognizable angles. My earlier sense of having found my feet, the sense that I had begun to assemble a mental map of the city, evaporated like a ridiculous dream. It would happen eventually, of course, if I spent enough time working on it. But not today, not tomorrow, and maybe not for weeks to come, and I didn't plan on staying that long. When we finally arrived at Grand Central Station, it was as if less than a heartbeat had elapsed since I was last there, desperately trying to detach myself from Quirrenbach. It was much earlier in the day now, not even noon as far as I could tell by the angle of the sun on the net, but no sense of that penetrated the station's gloomy interior. I thanked Laurent for bringing me this far, and asked him if he would allow me to buy him a meal, in addition to what I had already paid him, but he declined, refusing to get out of the driving seat of his trike. With goggles and fedora on and his clothes drawn up tightly around his face, he looked completely human, but I guess the illusion would have been harder to sustain indoors. Pigs, it appeared, were not universally loved, and there were whole swaths of the mulch which were out of bounds to them. We shook hands, and trotters, anyway, and then he drove away into the mulch. Chapter 24. My first port of call was the broker's tent, where I sold Zebra's weapon at what was probably an extortionate markdown on its true value. I could hardly complain. I was less interested in cash than in losing the weapon before it could be traced to me. The broker asked if it was hot, but I could see there was no real interest in his eyes. The rifle was far too cumbersome and conspicuous for an operation like the Ryvich job. The only place you could walk into with a piece of hardware like that and not raise eyebrows would be a convention of heavy artillery fetishists. Madame Dominica, I was gratified to see, was still open for business. This time I didn't need to be dragged there, but walked in willingly, my coat pockets swinging with the ammo cells I had forgotten to sell.
"She no open for business,"